I'm your host, Brittany McDowell, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of our PAC Politics Podcast. If you don't know, our podcast is brought to you by our organization, our United Resource PAC, which is a tax-exempt political organization. Before I talk about what I kind of have in mind to discuss today, I want to refresh your memory that on our last podcast episode, you know, the one where I came back after an extended absence, we talked about inflation due to stimulus. Today we're talking about stimulus labor shortages. Yes, that is true, that stimulus, COVID-19 vaccinations, and reopening, they've all helped in hiring this kind of rebound that we're seeing, despite the fact that we're hearing all in the ethers about stimulus labor shortages. Bank of America, they recently had a comment, right? And that comment was that, look, low-income Americans are not going to return to work until the unemployment extended boosts kind of go away, right? That extra money is keeping people out of participating in the labor market. So I'm going to discuss that. And then also we have a resource to help you check the status of your most recent economic impact payment if after all this time you still have yet to receive it. So that's what I have in store for today's episodes. Back and let's go ahead and get this episode started. You're listening to another episode of our PAC Politics Podcast. It's about that time for the next episode. Are employers really having this difficult time hiring people? You know, before we can even attempt to answer that question, we have to first be in agreement that there are many different forces at play here when it comes to getting the American people back to work. And as I kind of observe employers on the market, and I observe and listen to some of their talking points, and I observe a lot of the actions that they are taking, it's become abundantly clear to me that there are quite a few employers who don't understand that they are not in control, right? There are certain aspects of the equation here that they do control, such as the individual jobs that they bring to the job market. But outside of that, they are not really the driving force, the main factor in the American people returning to the workforce, right? They can, again, control the individual jobs they bring to the market. But by and large, they don't control the other jobs that are on the market. They don't control job availability en masse. They also do not control the feelings of safety that Americans have to feel in order to re-enter the labor market. They do not control the level of security that Americans must feel either in themselves getting the vaccination or those they love getting the vaccination, or even if they don't plan to get the vaccination, they have to feel that vaccinations are going to be effective for other people to ultimately decrease their chances of getting COVID. And again, those are things that employers do not control. And, you know, we have seen in recent months, we've seen hiring rebound. We've seen that due to stimulus. We've seen it due to vaccinations. We've seen it just due to the fact that the economy in large is pretty much reopening. But when I listen to some of these arguments that paint a picture as if Americans are living high on the hog due to stimulus, that is a picture that is very much detached from reality. because most of the stimulus that people have received, and we're not just talking about cash dollars, money, dollar bills, y'all. We're not talking about just that, right? People have received tax credits. People have received, or they've been able to take advantage of eviction moratoriums. There have been a whole host of things that have allowed people to stimulate the economy, right? People did not have to make payments on their school loans, and they were able to use that money in other ways to stimulate the economy. Again, it is not just people who received cash, who received deposits. Those weren't the only people stimulating the economy. But even that considered, most stimulus that we have seen is not stimulus that is sustainable for a decent quality of life. Specifically, if you're looking at, for instance, like the $1,200 checks that we saw, the $600 check, those were all one-time deals. Who in the heck, right? Our last stimulus payment that people received was, I believe, in February, March, right? March. If you are still living off of that now, that I want to let you know, that is not the case for most Americans. Most Americans, they had that money and they stimulated the economy with it. It left their hands. Now, they chose to stimulate it in different ways, right? And we talked about this in Monday's episode, our most recent episode, if you look at it, there's a certain level of control that people wanted to have over how you spent the money that you were given by our government to stimulate our economy. That's what they want to complain about, right? But anywho, getting back to my point here, that $1,200 people got is gone, right? Even when you look at the extended unemployment benefits, sure, yes, they are getting an extra, what, $1,200 per month that they wouldn't normally receive for their unemployment. But when you look at that and you consider what it takes to live in the average American city, I'm not talking about New York, California. I already know all of you people are screwed, right? That barely did anything for you guys. But for other people where the cost of living isn't as high, that still was not enough. I think you're not going to find anywhere in this country where the stimulus that was received was enough for people to be living high on the hog, as is kind of the picture that a lot of people are trying to create here. And I want you to know that all of this boils down to what people believe about other people, right? They believe that the people getting these stimulus payments are lazy Americans. And it also boils down to what they are motivated by. They always think about this. They want to point out the motivation of the other side. They're not motivated to work. They're not motivated to this. But are they pointing out how they are motivated by a need for cheap labor? Why am I saying cheap labor? Why am I not just saying they have a need for employees? A lot of these people are in need of cheap labor. We'll talk about that momentarily. But I want to pose another question here to you. Why don't you hear the same being said about companies? Again, I just pointed out how they want to talk about the motivation of Americans, but they don't ever acknowledge their motivation, because everybody is motivated by something. If you're not motivated, you do not take any action. They are motivated to get on television and tell you that the American people is lazy and they don't want to work. The American people, they, you know, just want, you know, something. They are motivated for that. We'll talk about why. We talked about that a lot of it on Monday, but we're going to talk about it some more today. But why don't you ever hear about the same about companies? Didn't they receive stimulus? In a lot of cases, they received significantly more stimulus than your average everyday Americans. Why am I asking if we've ever considered them in this equation? Well, not only did they actually receive stimulus, but if they're going to say that Americans who receive money are going to be less motivated to participate in the labor market, I could then turn around and say, you know what? Given the fact that we have a free market, and that's kind of what we've all subscribed to as Americans, and we agree it's totally awesome, part of having a free market is a responsibility on organizations, on corporations to innovate, right? If you don't innovate, the free market will kill you. Your organization will die. Well, in my opinion, companies who were just handed cash, they don't have to innovate because they don't have to do anything to essentially meet the demands of the market. For instance, this is one thing I promise you, like I'm being super, super honest and transparent here, something that I had to kind of scratch my head and think about a few times is, again, over the past year, we've heard time and time again about, oh, the Americans get money and they're not going to return to work. And we heard all about that. We heard about how they should have been prepared for the pandemic. They should have had savings. We didn't hear about how the companies who, like, they literally do financial planning. Yes, Americans should be doing that too. But companies have more of a responsibility to do it because it's not just one single family that is depending upon that, right? It's their customers. It's each of their employees and their families that are dependent upon their financial health. And so if they don't do financial planning, there's much more of an impact, not just for a single family, but for a community, in some cases, our country at large, depending on the size of the company. We never talked about that. We also, in specific industries, we talked about how some companies, some restaurants started doing curbside. Actually, quite a few did. Right? I'm sure some of them still got money. They got money. But also, a lot of companies got money that didn't do curbside, that were restaurants. And that boggled my mind because we didn't hold businesses to as high of a standard as we were trying to hold the average everyday American. Like, it is literally the responsibility of a company to innovate. It is literally the only way in a free market that you are going to be the go-to for your target market if you innovate, if you meet their needs. But we're not having conversations around the fact that, well, we just gave them money and some of them didn't innovate. Some of them didn't decide to do curbside. Some of them didn't decide to maybe do online stuff that they could have done, you know, even though they couldn't open in person. We didn't talk about any of that. We just wanted to say, damn you, Americans. That literally boggled my mind. So in my opinion, if we just give them money, they're going to lack motivation. They're not going to be motivated to reopen if they can just say, well, you know, I can sit on the sideline and get this money. And, you know, I know as a business, it's hard to operate because you've got advertising and marketing. There's a lot of work that goes into trying to get customers. There's a lot of work that goes into trying to keep customers. So, you know, I just do better getting a PPP loan. I just do better getting an EIDL grant. Like, right? We never once heard that. Never, 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 never. But we heard it time and time and time again about the people who lost their jobs through no fault of their own. We didn't even hear so much about the stories from people who, in their own direct experiences, interacted with employers who did not give a damn about protecting them during the pandemic. Now, was this all employers? No. But all you needed to do was find yourself scrolling across Twitter, looking in Reddit forums, and you would see not just a few, but many stories, many posts from people who worked at, like, not employers where they never interacted with, like, people who worked in restaurants, right? You would hear and see posts about people who worked in restaurants having a boss who knew that somebody was sick, but still wanted them in, who knew that multiple people were sick, but still wanted to keep the restaurant open and expose the general public to COVID, knowing that they had multiple COVID cases at that location. But when did we ever hear about that? When? The reality is, there are forces at work to control the consumer, right? They have, as I stated earlier, they're critical about how you personally decide to stimulate the economy. Absolutely critical of it. They're also looking to control the laborer. They want to force you to return to the labor market without considerations of your motivations. We all know, for instance, anyone who works in sales knows that the person you're trying to make a sale to has to be motivated in some way. Why is it that in this situation, even when someone goes to find a job and it's not a pandemic and it's just average times, right, they have to be motivated. Obviously, money is a motivation, but there are other things that motivate the individual. But here in this situation, we are not saying that some of the most important motivators matter. We're not talking about their feelings of safety and security. We're not talking about the trust that they have, not just in individual employers, but in employers en masse. Are things getting better in terms of the virus? Yes. Do we need to reopen? Absolutely. Are people still fearful of catching COVID-19 and some of these more contagious variants that we are hearing about almost on a daily basis at this point? Without a doubt. And that cannot be removed from the conversation about employers having a difficult time in hiring. Are low-income Americans better off on unemployment than they are working? Probably not going to say what you think here. The answer to that question is yes, they are. Is this ideal? No, it's absolutely not. What should we make of this fact? What we need to make of this fact is that our labor market does not provide enough for the laborers who participate in it. Will there always be people who decide not to participate? Sure. But a majority of people are making what for them is a logical decision. As an example, if I said to you, look, I've got, no, not if I said to you, but if a drug dealer, just say, came up to you and said, look, you know, I want to do something nice. I feel bad for all I've done that has negatively impacted people. And they said, just randomly to you, they just walked up to you on the street and they said, you know what, I'm going to give you $1 million. And I don't know you. You don't know me. This is my way of, you know, trying to overcome all the negativity that I've done to people, random people. Most people, despite the fact that they would probably not be so open about the fact that they would accept the money, fact is, most people would accept that money. They absolutely would accept that money. And a lot of us would say that we have problems with it, but when you're really being honest about it, can you really blame that person They're not the person who gave out the drugs. I mean, they're just doing it, especially if they kind of really need money. They've never, you know what I mean? Like, can you really blame them? Yeah, you should say, on a kind of a on at a higher level, you should say, well, you know what? They should really turn down that money. But if you're being honest about it, you really can't blame them. Because most of you, most of us know that we'd probably say like, well, meet me around the corner. But getting back to this observation around low income in Americans and them actively making decisions not to participate in the labor market because they make more on unemployment. What this really truly should say to employers is that they need to pay more. They absolutely need to. Why do they need to pay more? Yeah, you could talk about the fact that, incomes, have been stagnant and in a lot of cases have actually been like declining, right? You could make that whole bubbly wubbly argument. But really understand the psychology behind motivation and understand that money is a very unique motivator. Money, in a lot of times, will override other motivational factors. I talked in the previous segment about one of the kind of motivations to get people back to work being them feeling safe and secure about the virus and stuff. Yeah, there are a lot of people who there is no amount of money that you could give them that would make them want to jeopardize their family and their safety and themselves and their safety and their health. But all you have to do is look at when we were as a country in the thick of COVID and look at the fact that we still had people who were wanting to go to work and we weren't even offering, in some cases, we weren't offering that hazard pay, but people still showed up for work. Yeah, there's a whole, I love my job. Yeah, there were a lot of those people, but there were also a lot of people who said, look, if I don't work, I don't eat. And that should say something to employers when there are people who, despite the other motivators around the virus itself, vaccinations, health, safety, and security, there are people out there who would, and a significant amount of people, not all, but a significant amount of people who would overlook those other motivational factors and get off their butts and go to work if employers simply paid them more. Now, I've already addressed, and I want to be very clear about this. I've talked several times on this podcast about this conversation of upping the minimum wage to $15. Even though the proposal under which that kind of came about did not mean that that would happen instantaneously, like it wouldn't be signed and then the next day, oh, you've got to pay $15 an hour. It would happen over years. The fact still stood that if that had passed at the time when it was originally being proposed, what we would have seen is we would have seen employers in this moment reacting to future conditions, and that would not have been positive. Because of that, despite the fact that I understand and agree wholeheartedly that the minimum wage has to come up, now was not the time to take it to $15 an hour. Now was not the time to have the conversation. So I want to make that very clear because, just because you acknowledge that conditions have to get better does not mean that they have to go to this very specific place. That specific place is not where, in the moment of this pandemic, is not where we need to go. Now, the day after things are great, come back to me. Then ask me. I can guarantee you I'll have a different opinion. But in this moment, we need as much certainty as possible for the markets and for employers. We absolutely have to have that. Speaking about employees, I'm going to say something that a lot of people don't want to hear. Okay. Everyone knows that employees trade time for money. That's not what you don't want to hear. What you don't want to hear is that that is not the most effective way to make money. And actually, in all the ways that people can make money, it is the least effective and efficient way to generate income. Now, it's the thing that a significant majority of Americans do. And quite honestly, I would tell you to blame our society for pushing that instead of entrepreneurship and investing, right? The two things that are very, very, more effective and efficient at generating income, right? That's how those, you know, it's interesting when you hear some people talk, right? You hear some people talk and they talk about, you know, oh, you know, I can't wait to be wealthy one day. And I'm being very honest here, and I'm not saying this to, like, you know, disrespect anybody, but I really on this podcast want to be as open and honest with you guys, right? You guys will hear someone just say, for instance, who works at the DMV, talking about, oh, how they can't wait to be financially secure. You are never going to be financially secure by most people's standards. You might have your own personal definition of financial security working at the DMV or being a teacher, right? Those are commendable things to do. We need people at the DMV. We need people as teachers. But are you going to become wealthy? No, you're not, right? When you actually examine some of the people who were most successful in our country, they are not the people that most of us are taught to be. There is this saying, I forget exactly how it goes. For instance, regarding entrepreneurship, it's your A's and B's students. I don't know if I'm saying this exactly correctly, but generally speaking, the quote goes something along the lines of, your A's and B's students will end up working for your C students. That is because education may open a lot of doors for you. But what we don't talk about regarding education is that it teaches you to work for somebody else. It teaches you to manage someone else's businesses. It teaches you to work at someone else's schools. Again, I'm not downgrading, but I just think that people need to kind of live in reality here, right? We have to be honest with each other, right? The lies that some of you have been sold around one day you're going to be, and it makes it 10 times worse, by the way, when you see people posting alternate realities on social media. Gosh, that's a whole different conversation in itself. But some of you have really been sold this lie of financial security through employment. That is just not true. Just ask people who were used to years and years and years ago having the same employer, where now that's almost unheard of, right? People go from employer to, it used to be like a bad thing to kind of see that. You kind of look at somebody suspicious, like, okay, why can't you kind of, you know, stay with one employer? Now you're looking suspicious kind of at people who kind of do have one single employer, right? Times have totally changed. But the thing that has not changed is that, again, being very blunt here, the life that, for instance, the CEO of the organization, the life that they live is going to be very, very different than the life of the customer service rep, the life of the janitor, right? The life of the teacher, the life, it's going to be very, very different. And again, yes, I do think we do have to have conversations around equality, but you hear examples of, for instance, the increase in CEO wealth compared to your average everyday American. Yeah, there are some disparities there, but don't fool yourself in thinking that working in customer service, you will ever, ever, ever make exactly what your CEO makes. Now, maybe in the beginning when they're just starting out, and because here, and I'm going to be very honest, you know, I get mad, and I've really gone off on a tangent here, and I'm going to say this and then kind of go on about my business. I get mad when I hear that conversation, when it's framed as if business owners are doing something bad for paying themselves more than the actual employees that work for them. Because don't fool yourself. You work for these people. You are trading your time for their money. And you absolutely can take your time and walk away, but understand you won't get that money. But here's the deal. We don't talk about the fact that for many CEOs, many entrepreneurs, many business owners, they go months and years, in a lot of cases, bootstrapping their business, funding it all themselves, or putting their own home on the line so they can not only start the business, but pay you, forsaking time with their children, taking money out of their children's and stuff's mouth to pay you. When all you had to do was show up and you got paid regardless. And even when the business became profitable, most often they still had to wait longer to start paying themselves. Am I saying that for you to feel sorry for business owners? No. But I'm saying that because a lot of people, when they have the conversation around, oh my gosh, employees make so much less than CEOs and business owners, we don't have the conversation around all the sacrifices that business owners had to make. They put their home on the line. They didn't eat. They didn't pay themselves for years, but paid you consistently. So again, around that conversation, am I saying that we don't need to kind of raise income? Yes, we do. Yes, we do. But don't fool yourself in thinking that as the janitor, you need to demand to be making the same amount as a CEO. Yes, you absolutely make a unique and needed contribution, but the skills that you deliver are not on par with what it took to actually get the company going. So I'm off on a tangent. Let me kind of reel myself back in here. So look, when I consider that the most effective way to make money is essentially not trading your time for money, which is by means of investing is probably your best way to make money, right? Because as an entrepreneur, until you reach a certain point, you still have to trade your time for money. And a lot of times you're just donating your time because you don't get any money out of it. So anywho, considering that at the end of the day, all of that considered, employers, they still need laborers because no vision can manifest on its own, whether it's due to employees being hired and helping out, or it's due to a stroke of luck where that right person comes across at that right time, whether in the form of an investor or some sort of resource for you. Specifically speaking about employees, employees are still needed by employers. But here's the thing that employers, because I have to be fair here. I have to be fair and balanced, right? Employers, they have to lose this sense of entitlement that they have for cheap labor. Okay? Just kind of think about it for a second. Pretty much in every area of life, if you want something and you can't get it, but you're offering something to get it, if the answer still is no after you make your offer, you have to come back and you have to make a better offer. Think about it. When you buy a home, you put that offer out there. Yeah, I'll give you $350,000 for this. When they tell you, no, that's not going to work for us, what do you have to do? Do you just whine and complain and demand that they accept your $350,000 so you can move in that house and have your dreams come to life? No, you have to come back with a better offer. Same for getting a car. When you buy a car, if you say, well, yeah, you know, I like this. I don't know. What does a Kia cost? What? I don't know. $20,000. I don't know. I like this Kia, right? Do they even make Kias anymore? I don't know. Do I see them on the road? I'm not that observant. So, anywho, so let me say, I'm going to give you $20,000 for this Kia. If they say no, you know, we've upped the price to $25,000, and you have, like, if they tell you no, whining and complaining is not going to help you. Even if you can't come up and meet their demands, you have to come to the table with something better than you were offering, because your offer was rejected. Same deal if you think about, for instance, let's not even think about something that has a set price. Let's talk about, for instance, the flea market, right? You go to the flea market, and at the flea market, you want to get something, and you're like haggling with the person, right? You see a little trinket, and the trinket, you know, there's no price listed, and you say, yeah, I'll pay $5 for this. And they say, no, you know, I think it's worth a little bit more. You don't just stop the negotiations right there and there. Well, maybe you do if you know you can't go above that price, but anyone who negotiates, no, you never start where your max is, right? But you don't just say, well, you know, I'm just not even going to do it. Well, again, maybe you do if you don't know how to negotiate. But what I'm getting at here is the fact that if an offer is not working for you, if employers are seeing that they are putting offers out there of X amount of dollars per hour and no one is accepting that offer, why is the expectation that the lowly, low-wage earners should acquiesce to the demands of the employer rather than the employers acquiescing to the demands of the market, the free market? You know, the thing that we talk about all the time? What about this free market? What about the free market? What about the free market? I've rambled on enough. And before I close, I want to tell you what Bank of America said, because I think they're actually the reasons why I posed the question about low-income Americans. And I'm actually going to answer your question here. But before I can get into answering the question, I want to tell you what Bank of America said about low-income Americans basically deciding not to work until the unemployment boost was gone. And remember, I earlier said that, hey, are they better off? Yeah, they are better off. A Bank of America, they said that they expect about 2.5 million Americans are going to rejoin the workforce by the end of summer, early fall, basically when the stimulus benefits go away, specifically those extended unemployment benefits. They believe they end in September. And then they said, in addition to that, there's going to be about slightly more than 2 million Americans who they're going to just take much longer in the job market, or they just may not opt to go back and rejoin the job market at all. Now, one of the things that I want you to notice is that they were absolutely certain in their assumptions and felt comfortable making assumptions about why people aren't initially jumping into the labor market. They're not doing it because they're lazy and they just want to stay and get their unemployment benefits. They did that, but they did not talk about why people, per their expectations, aren't going to rejoin the labor market after the boosts go away. And I want to ask you, why did they decide not to do that? Why did they not decide to make an assumption about those group of people, but only the people who weren't working because of the big, bad unemployment boosts? You have to ask yourself, what do they believe? What do they believe? They believe Americans are lazy. Okay, that is a fact. And another fact is that there's not enough cheap employment opportunities to go around. So some people are going to be left out of the market. And that's something that we never really talk about as a society. We never talk about the supports that are available to and for those individuals. What is the solution for those people? Because quite frankly, at this point, they don't have one. Bank of America also talked about there being high risk that the labor participation rate is not going to recover, basically meaning that as many people aren't going to go back to work as they had before. But I want to make it very clear that that's not because Americans are lazy, specifically low-income Americans. It's because this is the way that the current system is designed, and no one is being honest about that. This is the perfect opportunity that we can capitalize on to change that system, because the system does not work for those people. And we absolutely have to have politicians that understand this, because if we're talking about the fact that low-income Americans are better off on unemployment, we have to talk about why. Today's resource that I am sharing is a resource that we have mentioned and promoted several times on our podcast before. What it is an official government tool that will help you confirm if the IRS and Treasury have sent your economic impact payment, your stimulus check. But in addition to that, it will also let you know the method by which they sent it, how they sent it, if they sent a direct deposit, and if you didn't get it, maybe it went into a wrong account. And if that's the case, it will also inform you of what will happen. Maybe they mailed you a check and it's in the mail and you know, your mail just, who knows, right? But if I don't have that information, but this tool does, it again is an official government tool. To get access to it, if you want, if you look in the description box of this episode, you will find a link to join our mailing list. We will not spam you. Our mailing list is an awesome way to keep in contact with us. But most importantly, it's an awesome way to get access to this tool. It's great, again, for you if you have not yet received your economic impact payment, as well as other people. It might be something that you want to get access to, so that way you can share it with them. The resource also does mention the other kind of option that some people are going to have when it comes to actually getting your economic impact payment. Some people will get checks, some people will get direct deposits, some people who are eligible will end up having to utilize a tax credit. If you want more information, not just on how you'll get your payment, if you'll get it when, you also, you know, might want to get information on this tax credit, which this tool will also provide you information on. So again, if you look in the description box below, click the link to join our email list. You'll just have to give us your name, your email address, and as soon as you sign up, we'll get you a welcome email. And then, like, within a few seconds after that, you'll get the email with access to this resource. So you can find that in the description box below. I hope the resource is of benefit to you or someone you know. All right, so that was our episode for today, May 7th, 2021. And I hope you walk away from today's episode understanding that yes, employers are having a difficult time in hiring, but it's not exactly and only due to the reasons that they talk about. And I hope you also understand that, yeah, there are Americans who are making the decision that is better for them economically, to receive unemployment as opposed to participate in the labor market, simply because they are part of the labor market that quite honestly suffers the most. And so I hope you can understand that and understand that because light is being shined on that, we now have to make a decision as a collective, whether you fall into that category or not. We have to make a decision to capitalize on this moment and have the much needed, very often not had conversations around this neglected part of our labor market. Because many, many Americans, more than we would like to be honest about, fall into this group. And if we don't address it, quite frankly, the problems that we say we're looking to avoid are not going to be avoided, because it's not possible for them to be avoided given the numbers. If that didn't make sense to you, go back and listen to what I said earlier. So anywho, I hope you have a great weekend. I will see you next Monday. Thank you for listening to another episode of our PAC Politics Podcast.